I'm a talkative person because I'm an SE dom. It's like my only world is the physical. My words are the only means of me getting out my meaning and intention. We'll see if I eat those words.
She'll be entertaining others all the time.
It's exactly where I wanted to go with it.
I would not dare to fist bump on a podcast where people can hear me.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Literally No Subtext podcast. It has been a hot minute, something like 6 months, I want to say. I should double check that. I feel like it's been 6 months because I know I have not done an episode since I pretty much started planning my wedding. You know what? Let me double check that. Okay, I was wrong. It has been 4 months, so that's not so bad, although the YouTube timelines aren't exactly 100% accurate. Anyway, I digress. So we are back today because I finally have the time slash energy slash motivation. I had a bit of a hiatus. More on that to come later in future episodes. But for now, I figured I'd finally come online to this podcast episode and talk about type. Specifically, what I've learned about myself in the last, how long have I been married now? Almost 3 months. So like 7 or 8 months of my life. I got engaged in June or July last year. Oh, rip. I cannot remember whether it was June or July. I think it was June 16th. Yes. Got engaged in June. And then I was engaged for 5 months, planned a wedding in that time, obviously. And then I got married November 25th and I've been married since then. Naturally, I have gone through a lot of changes in that time, both expected and unexpected. But if there's one thing that you know about me, I love to talk about what I've learned about myself. The FI user, especially in one of the higher slots as I am, is consistently going through identity changes and crises, and we love to talk about it because it is such a big part of our lives and our psyches and the things that we contemplate and think about throughout the day. So I've had a huge identity shift recently. And I will be talking more about that, but as an FI user, I generally tend to prefer to process these big changes by myself, within myself, or with my very, very private, trusted, close circle of close girlfriends. So I have been doing that and therefore haven't talked about it until now. This identity shift and all that. And there's more stuff that I will be talking about in the future, but that's stuff that I'm still working through. So let it be clear that the reason I'm talking about this now is because I have definitely finished with the wedding planning process. I've processed it all internally and I've made peace and reconciled what I went through, things I learned about myself, those identity shifts. And so I'm ready to talk about them. So obviously I really love studying people. I love studying myself in particular. I do it way too much, my therapist says. And I've just been through a huge thing that I had never done before. Planning a wedding or a party or event of that magnitude is something I'd never done, especially with someone else. The parties that I had planned before were a lot of the time spontaneous and they were way lower stakes and I would generally not put a lot of planning into them whatsoever. In fact, I didn't really plan a lot of parties before. It was kind of just like spontaneous gatherings. So I've never planned a party for 5 months that was such high stakes, being that I was the bride. And there was all this pressure that came with this, you know, like, you're the bride. People are going to be... It's so silly, actually, when I think about it. But of course, this is how the world is. And it's kind of like our fault for putting so much emphasis on weddings and brides and, you know, dreaming our whole life about being a bride or whatever. But I feel like there's all this pressure on brides to put on this amazing wedding and like the wedding has to perfectly reflect you as a person, you as a couple, and it has to make people, everyone has these different standards of what makes a good wedding and you have to make sure your people are comfortable and, you know, it's just the day that you're going to be judged for. Like I have been in circles where people have had conversations where they just, you know, will openly talk about someone's wedding that happened 5 years ago. So it's kind of this big event that like defines you as a couple and like who you are going to be as a couple and how you are as a couple. Now, I'm not saying that that's great or not stupid or like that that's a good thing. I'm not actually making a value statement about it at all. It's just funny how that is. And I know I play into that, especially with my bridal journey, which I absolutely lapped up and made a big deal about. So, you know what? I can't really complain about it. I am part of the problem, if indeed it is a problem. Anyway, so what we're going to get into today is I'm going to be going through things that I've learned about myself in the wedding planning process as an ESFP specifically. So I'm going to relate it back to the cognitive functions as much as I possibly can. If you do not know what the cognitive functions are, they are words that we use, certain terminology that we use within the Myers-Briggs typology framework, conversation, community. And I'll be approaching this episode through that framework. And I've included links in the show notes of this episode if you would like to learn more about the cognitive functions. They're not going to be super important for this episode because I like to think it'll still be understandable regardless of whether you know about the cognitive functions, because I'm just going to be talking in pretty human terms and using a lot of emotional slash identity words. But if you're interested in learning, that'll certainly help to understand the ways in which I link this back to the framework. So visit those links if you're interested, although I'm guessing a lot of you who are listening to this already know what that means. So I'm going to be talking about what I learned about myself, and I'm going to relate them to the cognitive functions, and I'm going to be talking about both expected and unexpected things that I learned. And you might be sitting there thinking, how can you learn things about yourself that are expected? Because doesn't that mean you're not learning them? But I'll explain what I mean as I go with that one. Because there are certain things that, you know, you notice about yourself in life before, like I learned about myself before wedding planning. So therefore it was less of a surprise that they came up in the wedding planning process. And then there are things that I learned that I had just no idea about myself. So that's what I mean about expected and unexpected. But I'll explain what I mean as I go. So I'm just going to dive straight into it. The first thing that I learned, which was the thing that was by far the most obvious to me and the thing that probably annoyed me the most about myself, was that my TE was stressed almost the entire time. And when I say the entire time, I don't mean for the entire 5 months. I mean like any time we're in wedding planning mode. That said, though, those 5 months were some of the most productive months I've had in my life because I was running a successful YouTube channel in which I was flourishing creatively, like I was coming up with new ideas. The channel did actually better financially than it has ever done last year. And I was simultaneously planning this really, really big event. So I was like hyper focused and hyper overworking. And, you know, I was unmarried at the time, living with housemates. So I had all the time in the world to put towards the channel and the wedding. So I was writing emails every single day. So actually the wedding came to my mind every single day. And a lot of the time when it did, the TE was stressed. What I mean by this, jumping back a bit, my observations about people in my life and things that I've heard in general from others in the type community have told me that tertiary TE, meaning TE, extroverted thinking, in the third slot of the cognitive functions stack is quite performative, in that it rears its head at random times and it's completely isolated when it does. When it rears its head, it's like all the other functions don't exist. So for EFPs, who are the two types who use TE in the third slot, because the TE is such a child, so to speak, when it does come out to play, it's immediate, it's intense, and it's in tantrums, basically. That's how I feel about my TE. That's what I've noticed about other EFPs in my life and from their own testimony. I'm not saying that, you know, you EFPs in the audience haven't been able to master this, because, you know, I've been able to master this in some areas of my life, but this was like one of the most high stakes things that I was ever going to do or plan. So it really came out in this circumstance. So, like, I find with the tertiary TE, because it's such a child, the reason why it's so immediate and intense and it presents in tantrum, so to speak, is because it stresses us out to stay in it for too long. We don't want to have to stay in that function for too long. You know, we don't like having to reorganize plans that we've already organized. That's something that's been in my life many times. So this was actually a very expected thing that I learned about myself. in that, you know, I've noticed this about myself ever since I started paying attention to type, and even before that, but obviously I didn't have the vocabulary to explain it. So yeah, I noticed this about myself, but like, I just noticed it on a whole new level with the wedding planning process. And, you know, all these things come out 10 times more when you are really comfortable with the person you're planning the event with. So obviously I was really comfortable with my fiance at the time, Andrew. And so I just let all of these sides of me come out, and I kind of probably like entertained / stewed in them a little bit, you know. And I'm a very stubborn person. I have a choleric temperament. So sometimes I'd be stressing, you know. So for example of how this would pan out, and just for context, my fiance is an ENTJ. So I wanted things organized immediately, pretty much all of the time. If we wanted something, I was like, we have to get a move on it now. Otherwise we're not going to get it. We're not going to secure it. It's going to end up, you know, eventuating in a really bad way if we don't make this happen now. So that was my attitude towards everything. If we had made a decision, I wanted to get on it right then and get it sorted immediately for peace of mind, so that I didn't have to think about it again. And again, just like, I wanted to spend as little time in the TE as possible. And like, you might notice about EFPs that's why it's like when the TE comes out, it's like raw TE. It's just raw. It's not like mixed in with the other functions. It's like, here's a goal. I want to reach this goal right now. Thank you. Get out of my way. No, I don't want to hear about your feelings right now. So back to my example, I would want to organize things immediately, but my fiance, who's an ENTJ, fiance at the time, he's now my husband, he didn't care as much because TE is his dominant function. He's in it 90% of the time. He's way less stressed by his TE because he's so comfortable with it. And he's also an engineer. So he is like next level comfortable with it, because these kinds of things we were planning, he does every single day at work to an even greater degree with people yelling at him. Like, so he's very used to this kind of stuff. So he was way relaxed and way chill about it. So he wouldn't get stressed if things weren't organized immediately. Ironically, this made me look like the bigger control freak of the two of us, even though I'm the P and he's the J, you know. And there's a stereotype that J's are the more organized and controlling and P's are the more relaxed and like go with the flow. So yeah, but we know on this channel that we don't like to stereotype too much, especially on the podcast where we offer some more nuance. So yeah. Ironically, like, because I'm so stubborn, him being calm about those things just made me more stressed. And then I was like, clearly I'm getting stressed, so I care more about this. Therefore, I should have a say about the fact that it needs to be done right now. And I really had to employ a lot of self-restraint and virtue in how I communicated with my fiance with the things that we divvied up the list. We divided the tasks, and I really had to make sure I wasn't micromanaging him with his tasks, because if I went a few days and he hadn't made any headway with his tasks, it would stress me out. I eventually learned that I had to just stop asking and trust that he would take care of it, which was a really good exercise in trust. And I know he appreciated that, and it ended up being fine, of course. He literally did everything he said he was going to do. It was just, I needed it done more immediately, and he was happy to wait because he just naturally trusted that he was going to do it and it didn't stress him out. So ironically, this meant that I did most of the logistics and organized more than Andrew did in the entire process, because leaving them till later didn't stress Andrew out as much as it did me. And I say that this is ironic because the stereotype is that the J's are the more organized ones. This was actually the motive behind me answering in the video that I did on my main channel, Dear Kristen, with Andrew, called Meet My Fiance, Meet My ENTJ Fiance. There was a question saying, who's more organized? So this whole thing was the motive behind why I was like, I'm more organized, excuse me. I've been doing more for the wedding, thank you very much. That was before I had all of those epiphanies about how I needed to trust him more, and me wanting to do things more immediately didn't necessarily mean I was more organized. It was just a different preference. And naturally my brain was like, I know the right way to do things. My way is the correct way. So there was there was a process of letting go on my end that needed to happen. So that was the first thing that I wanted to talk about, like the most obvious thing. My TE was stressed the whole time. Though I did expect that, as I said, because of the fact that that has been in existence in my life a lot beforehand. But this was the period of my life where it was like the most instances of it happening in a concentrated time period. So I just felt like, after a while I wasn't fun to be around and I was trying to overcompensate in different ways. Like, I'm still a fun person, which is highly unpackable. Moving on. So the next thing that I noticed about myself was that I panicked more as the date of the wedding approached. So specifically two or three days before the wedding, I went into this panic because it was suddenly real to me. Now for Andrew, he did not go through that panic. And when I say panic, I don't mean about the logistical elements. I mean like the existential panic about the huge life-changing, lifelong commitment that I was about to make. Naturally, if you're going to get married, I think everyone goes through a period when they get engaged or married, like in the engagement period or before the engagement period, there's got to be like a period of sitting down, having existential thoughts, maybe a crisis, and just like realizing how big of a commitment you're about to enter into and the decision that you're going to make, and like contemplating the results of making such a commitment and how it might affect your life and what it means for your identity, and, you know, asking all the questions that happen in a regular existential moment. So for Andrew, he said he did have a similar moment, like an existential moment, like the realization of the gravity of what he was going to do on the day that he proposed to me. So obviously he had thought about it a lot beforehand, but he said that on the day he proposed to me, throughout the day, that's when he felt it the most. Though he didn't panic in the way that I did, he said it was more like a gravity that just sat with him throughout the day of realizing what he was going to do that night. Whereas for me, it was 2 or 3 days before. I hadn't panicked at all or like had that existential moment at all. Like I'd been sure and I'd felt peace about it. Like I knew my feelings were peaceful, but suddenly like the NI caught up with me of like this huge vision and this huge significance and the realization of the meaning behind what I was about to do. And so I just, like, it was at our wedding rehearsal, which was literally the Thursday and our wedding was on the Saturday, where now that I was physically walking down the aisle in our rehearsal and physically rehearsing the mass, that like activated the NI panic I think I went home and I was saying things like, I'm about to commit my entire life to someone. And I think the people around me must have been like, are you serious? You're only having these thoughts now. But of course they weren't like that because they were like classic Kristen. And, you know, it was something I had to go through, and I'm glad that I did, because actually going through that contemplation beforehand meant that standing on the altar and saying those vows, like, it's always more meaningful when you've had the existential moment, you've unpacked it, the meaning has hit you, and then you have still come out feeling peaceful and happy about it. So when we stood there and said the vows to each other, that hit, like, the gravity was also hitting me. So obviously this could be explained by the difference in the NISE slot here, both between like the difference between Andrew and I. As an ENTJ, he uses NI, introvert intuition, as his second function, whereas for me it's my last function and SE is my first function. So, you know, the SE meme, if you're a Dom SE, is that you don't really think about the long-term consequences of things until you're like in the moment or like afterwards, you know, until it's like happening right in front of you. That's why SE Doms typically are so impulsive and also seeking adrenaline and just want to have fun because they just want a fun experience, and they're blind to the consequences and results of that a lot of the time. I'm generally speaking here, you know, as we get older, obviously we learn that about ourselves and we learn how to temper that and switch on the right filters at the right moments. But that's still like our default, our natural. So I didn't know that I needed to switch on this filter earlier because I just was trusting my feelings that I felt peaceful and great about it. And then suddenly it hit me a few days before the wedding, which was highly unexpected to me, if I'm honest. And, you know, because I'd heard that, you know, everyone goes through some kind of like, you know, in the movies, they're like, everyone goes through some kind of cold feet before the wedding. I'd had friends who had as well, and or some kind of panic. And I was like, wow, I haven't gone through that. And I was naive enough to think that I'd escaped the panic, but then it hit me. So it has happened before. So I should have expected it. But I didn't, because I guess I was like, no, this is a big decision. Like, I've contemplated this more than any other decision, and like, it just feels right. It's fine. But yep, still happened, and it did surprise me, I guess. So yeah, very different with a SE Dom and a NI auxiliary, as Andrew is. He didn't have any kind of panic closing up to the day. I asked him later. I was like, you didn't have any kind of panic? He's like, oh, I was nervous. Like, I was nervous to stand there up in front of people, but no, like, there wasn't panic. So, yeah, I guess I'm a bit of a meme in that sense. And I mean, it's why SE Doms are, you know, every type has their gift, their natural virtues and talents and gifts that they're prone to in a personality, through a personality lens. And I think one of the gifts of SE Doms is that they can really be in the moment and bring others into the moment. But something that has to give in order for us to be in the moment is that perpetually present long-term vision of the future. And so that's why these kinds of things happen closer to the dates of whatever's happening. It's why we also have a stereotype of being less worried about things that are coming up and less scared or nervous about things that are coming up. Though typically the nerves only hit us like the day before, which I can say for all the things in my life, like exams or interviews, things like that, the nerves really only hit the day before. And any time before the day before, it was like, oh, that's in the future. That's future Kristen who has to deal with that. So on the same sort of wavelength, another thing that I learned about myself was closer to the day, I panicked about the logistics as well, because I was catastrophizing everything in my head. I kept feeling like there was something that I hadn't done or something that I hadn't organized. Now, this might be a general bride thing, to be honest. You see a lot of brides going through this before the wedding, but it also could be explained by my inferior use of NI, as I spoke about before. As, I mean, I'm well known in my circles, you can ask my friends, for like catastrophizing and being catastrophizing everything that doesn't need to be catastrophized, and being generally intolerant of the unknown and like about the things that I care about, things that I'm worried about. And what I tend to do is immediately project the worst case scenario onto things as a result of my baby NI being so underdeveloped and so unformed and so unnuanced. So this isn't something that I'm just coming up with on spot. It's something I've noticed about myself my entire life and also other SE Doms. And it's pretty understood in the type community that this kind of thing is typical of baby NI. As I said, it's far less nuanced in the inferior spot. And so it's more archetypal in, I guess, the visions that it presents than it would be for a dominant user. So what I mean by that is, where a dominant user might foresee hundreds of different visions at one time, me, I'm only capable of producing like three at any given time, which is the good vision, the bad vision, or some other third vision that I can't picture at all but must exist. So I do think that a lot of brides would do this in wedding planning, obviously, but I really do it with a lot of things in my life. And all of those who are close to me have noticed it. Again, including my therapist. So this could be typical of a dominant SE inferior NI user because, as I said, Dom SEs experience life for what they see in front of them as it comes in the moment. They are intensely present and in the moment. So projecting their vision onto the future is very unnatural for them and can be therefore super stressful and often wrong. They're rookies at doing it, basically. So as a result, like, what I catastrophize about is often the worst case scenario. And my best friend who's an ENTJ will often be like, Kristen, you are literally projecting the least realistic outcome that could happen and you're stressing about it and letting it consume you. Heck, even the times I feel confident about a vision I'm projecting because I have a lot of gathered SE data that supports that particular vision, I'm often missing all the other possibilities because I'm blind to them due to a lack of gathered data to support those visions. So because this has happened a lot in my life, I did expect this to happen with the wedding, but it was still really stressful to be in the moment. No matter how many times you have catastrophized in your head and how many times you've been like, this is a thing that I do. I tend to catastrophize about unrealistic scenarios. You know, when you're in the catastrophe, you're just in stress mode. So you don't realize, you don't have the self-awareness a lot of the time to be like, nope, I'm doing that thing, you know? So my fiance Andrew did say multiple times, like, it's going to be fine. Like, don't worry, it's going to be fine. That's not going to happen. Like, it'll all be fine. You know, he would often say, like, we've got a church, we've got a priest, we've got the invites out, like, we're getting married. And I would often, because again, I'm stubborn, I was like, that's simplifying everything that I'm doing. Why are you being like this? Classic. Anyway, so yeah, that's just a few little observations about Dom SE in Vera and I and how it generally leads to catastrophizing, projecting a scenario that won't happen. An unnuanced scenario. And just like panicking about things. Because, you know, I was trying to juggle literally hundreds of different things when planning this wedding. And, oh, that TENI was in overdrive and I was just stressed. So following this, going from this wavelength, another thing about me that I noticed during wedding planning, for which I've just set the groundwork, is that I wasn't particularly attached to any visions for our wedding. So this is maybe a good thing about that bottom NI. So the only things I was attached to in terms of visions for the wedding were my things that I have had like FI values about. Thankfully, they overlapped with Andrew's values. Andrew and I have very, very similar values, which is one of the reasons we decided to get married. So with the big things that I was married to, like certain ways that I wanted the liturgy to happen and certain people I wanted to invite, or like the categories for what kind of people we were going to invite, and, you know, priorities about what the most important thing in of the whole day were, and, you know, photos, videography, those kinds of things. Like we, Andrew and I tended to agree. Generally speaking, we both believe that this was the biggest day of our life, worthy of the biggest celebration, because we were committing ourselves in a sacramental union to each other in marriage. And it was deserving and worthy of a big, big celebration and a grand day, basically. So because we had that understanding of the deeper meaning of the marriage as a sacrament, we were both going in knowing that it was going to be big, and we were happy to, yeah, make an extravagant thing of it. So that was good. So we avoided a lot of arguments, disputes, because of our overlapping values, which was really nice. In fact, I felt like Andrew and I were a team the whole way through. The only things, the thing that was the most contested was the music issue. And again, the things I was attached to, my FI values, were the things that I generally had visions about that I was married to about the wedding. And it was music. It was just music. So the first one being ABBA and whether we were going to play one ABBA song at the wedding or two ABBA songs at the wedding. I was insistent that we played two. Dancing Queen had to be in there. Andrew was like, Mamma Mia will be generally more loved. And I was like, I'm putting my foot down on Dancing Queen. If you want Mamma Mia, we also have to have Dancing Queen. The second was the playlist. I wanted a playlist at some point in the night because people were more likely to love, say, Dancing Queen if the actual ABBA version came on in a playlist over the loudspeaker. But Andrew was saying we should have a band play it because it's more of a vibe. So that was another thing. And then the third thing was the first dance, what song we wanted. It took so long for us to choose because we both care so much about music and we have different taste in music, and we had to wait for an overlapping song that we both felt like really good about. Because we both have, like, music is such a high priority to both of us. And I knew there would be an issue because our difference is, like, the difference in our taste was big enough that I knew we would probably have a few disputes about it. But I went full ham and I would not budge on these values. Though, funnily enough, we ended up settling for... On the day, I can't even tell you how many ABBA songs were played on the actual wedding day, because, again, I wasn't paying attention to that because I was in full SE mode, so it's ironic, isn't it? And we ended up going with a band. I don't think Dancing Queen played on the playlist, although there was a 30-minute window where we did have a playlist. And our first dance song ended up being I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles, which was a slowed-down acoustic version played by one of our friends. So that was perfect. So we ended up settling on that. Not settling, like, that was a win for both of us. The day we chose it, it was a full-blown yes. But anyway, back to, I'm getting slightly off topic here. So back to this thing about me not being particularly attached to any visions for our wedding. What I mean by that is Andrew had more big picture idealistic visions about what a wedding ought to be. And I had more specific things that I cared about. So like specific details. You know, I obviously had details about how I wanted the liturgy to go ahead and that, but mine were way more specific, the ideas about the liturgy. Andrew was more like bigger picture idealistic visions, such as like it's got to be really sacred and it's got to, you know, elevate the mind to God, and it's got to be beautiful because beauty elevates the mind to God, those kinds of things. So I found that it was really hard to get Andrew to budge on his serious ideals and beliefs that he had, but hey, I was the same. I am the same, and that's one of the things that we love about each other, so no real complaints here. And this was something that I did expect, so, I mean, obviously I didn't expect some of the things that Andrew was really set on surprised me. Like, he really wanted a sit-down dinner, and I didn't mind a buffet. But when I saw how much he cared about it, I was like, okay, all right, well, I guess I don't really care that much about it. And that happened a lot, like, with the... You know, I put my foot down on music and the liturgy, like the religious element of it, like the mass. But with the actual reception, I was not really attached to anything. But Andrew seemed to be attached to quite a few different ideals, which ended up being amazing. The venue that he had his eye on, we went there and I was married to it immediately. I loved it. And yeah, it could not have been a more perfect day. I loved every second of it. So kudos to him. So the next thing that I want to talk about, which... I so obviously expected, was that I was extra. I was incredibly extra and went above and beyond during the entire wedding planning process. As in, not just with the day, the plans itself, but me being a bride and milking that. I wanted to absolutely live up this saga of my life, and literally nothing was going to hold me back. I was like, I will never be a bride again. I need to live this up for all that it's worth. So I'm talking like I made an entire separate Instagram story on my private Instagram where I asked my followers, who wants to be part of my private close friends Instagram where I'm just going to wax lyrical about wedding planning and just go nuts. And I had like 200 people sign up for that, and just I was like, you have all given me permission to go full ham. And so I did. I externally, as an extrovert, I loved it. I was sharing my wedding planning process with those people and... You know, just kind of posting little teasers of the dress and, you know, posting little surveys and getting people involved. And it was so cool because I connected with people that I hadn't heard from in years. And I was getting advice from people as well who had been married or were also going through wedding planning. It was just such a nice vibe. And so I got to write long paragraphs. I got to just post shameless selfies about how excited I was. So there was that. Then there was also the fact that, you know, I bought this entire outfit for my wedding morning. I was like, the wedding morning is like 6 or 7 hours of the day. It's a significant chunk. I need an outfit for this. So I bought my own beautiful white pajamas, a really stunning extra feathered dressing gown, and slippers that said bride on them, of course, for the morning. And I bought slippers for my bridesmaids as well, which was really cool. And, you know, I bought other gifts for the bridesmaids, and I made custom cards for all of the bridesmaids. And for my hen's party, I went above and beyond. I hired out an entire bus and took almost 30 women down to a wine region in just south of Sydney. And we just went to wineries for the entire day. I went through a company that had food included. And we just took photos and I bought an entire outfit for that. And, you know, I had the full sash for me and my bridesmaids, and I had a veil on for the day, and I had custom sunglasses that had Mrs. Placco, which is my new last name. And I got scrunchies for myself, naturally, a white one. And for every single guest, I bought scrunchies. I had party bags for each guest. I had a whole scavenger hunt quiz for all of my guests. And then naturally there was the bridal shower that my sister planned for me, which was above and beyond. She also had a scavenger hunt and all of these games and these huge signs that, you know, I'd given her a budget for the day. And Andrew was so great. I asked him for budgets and he was like, yeah, sure. This is your time. Go crazy. So I really lived up the time. I was buying like custom t-shirts and I almost bought, I actually don't want to reveal that. It was a particular shirt that... No, you know what? I will reveal it. I almost bought, you know, the cover of the Taylor Swift Eras tour with all of her eras in the background and she's looking over her shoulder at the camera in black and white. I almost bought one of me with photos of all my eras in the background and a photo of me at the front in black and white saying my bride era. Oh my word, please don't unsubscribe. So that's just a little taste of how extra I was going with this process. And there's so much footage of me dancing on my hen's night, dancing on the morning of my wedding, just delivering very extra monologues to my Instagram followers, buying things that definitely weren't necessary. But I have to say, I have no regrets for the bride period. I absolutely lived it up. And I think that was a period that reflected my personality the best. I think the hen's night, the hen's day in particular, very much reflected my personality. And you know what? I have no shame about it. So that, my friends, was obviously expected. So a couple of others that I expected less, things that I learned about myself, was firstly that in the whole general wedding planning process, like the actual planning of logistics, I did not present like a P. I was expecting to be much more of a P. I was expecting to be way more relaxed, way less attached to things, way more go with the flow, way less preoccupied in my head with the stress of wedding. So this was one of the most unexpected realizations about myself, and to be honest, I did not like it. It was an unwelcome realization, which is, of course, unpackable because perhaps I like being defined as this relaxed, chill, go-with-the-flow gal, but the truth is, with ESFPs, I think, you know, we are relaxed most of the time, except with the things that we really care about or are attached to or things that are really high stakes, which a wedding definitely is. Though I guess this might also be because I have a choleric temperament, which not every ESFP has, and I do know other ESFP brides who are way more chill. Like, I was a bridesmaid for an ESFP, and she was so like, she's like, oh, here, you know, I'm thinking of doing this for my bridesmaids. Like, I'm thinking of having them in this color dress. And then one of my friends who is present, who is a J, said, I think Kristen would look really good in this color. And she was like, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, why didn't you wear that color? Classic P energy, just like, I kind of don't really know what I want and I just want you guys to have fun, so wear what you want. And I was not this mellow, I was not this relaxed, which is very unpackable, but you know, I have a choleric temperament and I'm stubborn and I'm a strong gal, and the wedding did mean a lot to me, so I was highly invested. I was super attached to our wedding being both fun and great, and also significant and reverent enough to reflect the sacredness of the union. Which brings me probably to the last thing that I learned about myself, and I did not expect this either. I was surprised at how classy I wanted our wedding to be. Now, if you'd asked me a year before I got married, because I'd already matured by that point, I would have been 29, 30. I was not my young hooligan self anymore. If you'd asked me a year before my wedding, do you want your wedding to be more like a party woo girl kind of vibe, or do you want it to be more classy? I would have been like, actually probably more classy. But I just kind of was subconsciously expecting that I would want more of a woo kind of vibe. Until I was actually there planning the wedding, I was constantly surprised about the decisions that I was making that were not in the category of letting loose, party, disco, verging on trashy kind of vibes. And at one stage in my life, this was all the partying that I was like, I was very much about that kind of party. But I was constantly steering away from that. So making sure that things were organized to a T, making sure that I wasn't drinking much on the night. I was very strict with that, not drinking a lot on the day, and making sure that both me and my bridesmaids were dressed in a very classy way, making sure the venue was classy, like there were chandeliers. It was very regal, our venue, and I just loved how classy it was. Like I even surprised myself by saying I didn't want to make a speech. I just knew if I got onto the microphone at my wedding, it would be very woo kind of energy. And I just really wanted to have the day as relaxing, not having to worry about getting up and making a speech. And I'm really glad that I made that call, because I was able to sit back and relax and actually listen to the speeches without having anxiety about a speech that I had to give. And usually I don't have anxiety about speeches when they happen in the moment, which a lot of them do. But I wasn't going to spontaneously grab the microphone at my own wedding, because I can't trust myself spontaneously on a microphone. I'm quite an eloquent person, but when I'm in a party vibe, I've typically been known to phrase things and say things that just are a bit, not foolish, but like I'll phrase things in a way that doesn't accurately reflect what I'm trying to say, basically, because I haven't sat through, thought it out, and planned it. So I knew the only way I was going to give a speech at my wedding was if it was planned and I was able to write it out beforehand. But then I knew that if I did want to give a speech, I wouldn't want to verbatim write it. I would want to write dot points. So there would be some kind of improvisational element to it, which I know I'm good at improvising. That's when I'm in my element. But I knew because it was the wedding and it was such a high stakes thing, I would be stressed about it throughout the day. And I just didn't want that stress. I wanted to be able to enter the reception and just know I am now relaxing. I am not in work mode. I am not in performance mode, which is the same reason that I did not choose to do a choreographed dance for our first dance. When I was 25, I had this dream about having a choreographed dance number, specifically a flash mob featuring all of the bridal party at my hypothetical wedding. But with Andrew and I was very much like, no, let's not choreograph anything, even though I have lots of dancer friends and could even probably have choreographed it myself. I was like, no, because I just know myself, and if I were to choreograph a dance, I would enter performance mode, standing up there and having all eyes on me. I have such a history of being on stage and being a dancer that I just know I would enter performance mode and would be focusing on that instead of the actual moment that was happening. So that's why I chose not to give a speech. Like, that's the thinking behind not doing a choreographed first dance and not giving a speech. And I'm really glad with how those decisions turned out. I've kind of gone on a tangent here. This is no longer on the trajectory of, I was surprised at how classy I wanted our wedding to be. But yeah, I surprised myself in that, you know, 25-year-old Kristen had certain ideas about the wedding. But I think when I was 25, I was like, oh no, I want it to reflect me, you know, because I had not met this person that I could actually fathom spending my life with. So when you're trying to envision a wedding when you haven't met your person yet, everything you're envisioning has to do with you and who you are and making sure it reflects you. But being with Andrew, it was now a we and an us. And, you know, I had a whole new and different multi-layered understanding of the sacrament we were going to be entering into, the gravity of it, the sacredness it deserved. And so I didn't want to. And so a lot of those decisions completely changed, which I feel is completely fine and natural. So that's the wedding planning process. Then there was the day where, you know, there were a lot of things that I expected. Like during the morning time, I was just loving life. I was dancing. I was being an ESFP meme. I was singing Taylor Swift. I was just so happy, very bodily expressive. So I was in the moment. Funnily enough, I wouldn't let Jenna talk about the future even 1 hour away. Like she was saying things like, in 1 hour, you'll be a bride. And I was like, stop, stop making me think about the future like that. Let's just enjoy the moment. Like I was getting stressed about that. So I wanted to be completely in the moment on my wedding morning. So that didn't surprise me. Obviously, I knew I would be singing and dancing on my wedding morning, but stressing about thinking even 1 hour into the future, did not foresee that. And then the stress in between the ceremony and the reception, I also didn't expect, because the day relied on a lot of logistical time, crucial time points. Like, it was a very packed day and it was so meticulously planned that we had to hit those time markers, and we ran overtime by like 45 minutes with the mass because I was late. Rip. Don't want to talk about it. And so we were late for everything that needed to happen in between the ceremony and reception, which was like saying hello to everyone, receiving congratulations, having photos with family at the church, then going to the photo shoot with the bridal party, having our portraits done, making sure we had some quality time, some beers and some charcuterie with our bridal party as well. All of that suddenly was really rushed. And then it was Saturday traffic as well. So I was just in that TE stress state that I was talking about before. I was in that the whole time, which I feel like didn't reflect in the photos, thank goodness. But it was bad enough that at the end of our photo shoot, I took a sigh of relief. And then I looked at my clock and realized that it was like close to 5 o'clock. And then Andrew said, a lot of our day is already gone. And that's when I realized I've spent the last few hours of my wedding day stressing. I don't want to be doing this. And so Andrew, who could tell I had been stressing a bit, just sort of looked at me and he's like, let's just make sure as soon as we enter that reception, we relax and enjoy the night and we don't stress anymore. We just party and we lap it in and we soak it up. I was like, absolutely. And thank the good Lord, that is what happened. As soon as I entered that reception, it was party time. I was there with all of my friends in one room. I had all the attention on me. I was in my element, and suddenly I didn't care about things going off time. I didn't care, you know, about things that had happened, like that I'd forgotten to include, like we'd forgotten to, you know, tell the priest beforehand that he was going to be saying grace. But, you know, I'm good at improvising. I thought on my feet and I simply just went over to the priest. I was like, Father, could you say grace? Great. All right. I'm going to get this microphone for you. And we handled it and I didn't get stressed and it was wonderful. So I feel like although I did the wedding planning process really well, I was in my element the most when I was firstly being an extra bride and just being at that reception and being in the moment, just loving life. And people were telling me I was exuding joy and just so happy. Anyway, so am I gonna jump to plan another big event like that? Absolutely not. Thankfully, I don't think I'll have to. Thankfully, I think that saga is over. This was the biggest event I will ever plan in my life. I am so, so proud of myself. I managed to plan this entire event, like a huge event, and keep the channel going. I even pre-filmed videos for my wedding and honeymoon period so that I could keep releasing while I was taking time off for my honeymoon. I was on fire. I was on a roll, and that's very classic of me. It's like when I know I'm doing well in one area, I get motivated and I do well in other areas as well. And then I become like a productivity machine. So I would not have been able to do it obviously without Andrew. I think Andrew just made it so much fun because he was such a good project buddy. I'm so glad he didn't have that same stressed energy as I did. He didn't bring that into the day or the planning process at all, thank God. So he balanced me out in a lot of ways. He helped to reduce my stress in a lot of ways, which was really wonderful. But yeah, I'm super, super proud of myself and I'm really glad with how things turned out. I think the day was the best day of my life and just turned out to be more magical than I could have imagined. And all of the decisions that I made, especially with photography and videography, is one like such great calls. Our wedding video was so beautiful. And I'm just really happy with what we have to hold on to from that day. It feels like a lifetime ago, to be honest, because it's just, I've just turned such a corner since the wedding in terms of I've just entered this, now I'm married stage of life, which is another thing to talk about in a different podcast episode. But that's it for now. So thank you for listening. If you stayed this entire time, I've been recording for 50 minutes. So I know this will be a long one. So I appreciate you staying. It was really nice to talk about this. I enjoyed it. And it was nice to ease my way back into content creation with a podcast. So I didn't have to appear on camera just yet, which we love. So thanks guys for your support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry I haven't uploaded in so long. Please leave any questions you have in the comments below. Usually I would plug all my stuff here, but I feel like my stuff has been pretty scarce over the last 2 months. But if you're interested in checking out personality videos, please head over to my main channel, Dear Kristen. I've had a lot of time to think over the past 2 months, and I'm really proud of what I've built on the Dear Kristen channel and the Dear Kristen community. Thank you to all of my patrons who are listening, who have stuck by me and believed in me over the last few months, which has been an exceptional time. If you'd like to join the community, we have a thriving Discord server over there, so feel free to join and check it out. We're doing our live streams. I took a hiatus from those for 2 months, but I'm back now, so we do live streams every month. And there's some extra content on there, and there's also option of becoming a YouTube member if that's easier for you. No worries if you wouldn't like to do that. That's just for people who, I guess, want to support the channel / be involved in a more tight-knit Myers-Briggs community, I guess. We discuss a lot of things on there, but there's also a lot of nice friendships that have been formed on the community as well. If you want to see some of my type trend resources, please go to hellodearkristen.com. That website and that series has been inactive for a while, but the resources are still all there, and I'm hoping to be able to put some more there soon. But the type trends thing is a whole other kettle of fish. There is also a contact page on the Hello Dear Kristen website, where if you have a question that you'd like me to address on the podcast, you can send a submission there. I address some of your questions on the Dear Kristen episodes, and it's lots of fun. And aside from that, if you guys enjoyed this episode, I'd appreciate if you could rate the podcast. That's always really helpful, and I've looked at the ratings, and I'm really grateful to you guys who have done that, because, you know, you don't have to do that. I know I'm really irregular with my uploads here, but classic P and FI user. Really. Anyway, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, I hope you have a fantastic life. Don't forget to let me know your thoughts in the comments of the YouTube video, which you can find on the Literally No Subtext YouTube channel, which is linked in the show notes. All right, guys, see you next time. Bye.